In Britain, that kind of weather turned Christmas into a tragedy for some people and made for some unpleasant conditions for others. Britain has experienced some unusually severe weather this month with extremely cold temperatures, and Joan Borman reports many people apparently were not prepared for it.
15 elderly people died in Britain on Christmas Eve as temperatures dropped below freezing. They all apparently died of exposure in their separate homes in the West Midlands of England. Britain has been in the grips of unusual Arctic weather for the last 3 weeks, which has disrupted road travel and electrical power, and has even stranded Queen Elizabeth in a snowstorm. A medical spokesman said the elderly people died of the cold and that the number of deaths was exceptional due to their inadequately heated homes. Medical facilities, too, have been hard hit during the cold snap. A Birmingham hospital ran out of plaster of Paris because icy roads have increased dramatically the cases of fractured bones. Joan Borman, London.
The National Safety Council keeps a count of highway traffic fatalities during holiday periods, and you might think that's to warn travelers so they will exercise more caution because of a normal increase in traffic and a higher death toll during holidays. But so far, the toll for the Christmas weekend is just over 300, while the number of traffic deaths for a non-holiday weekend this time of year is estimated to be 560. That's the news from the Associated Press Radio Network. This is David Malendi.
Gareth Sticks, and Dominic's continues to bring you super savings on main course meats by bringing back the Great Steak Sale. No matter how you prepare them, USDA graded choice beef steaks are a family favorite, like versatile round steak, only $1.49 a pound, and delicious sirloin steak is just $1.69 a pound. You'll also save on Land O'Lakes USDA grade A fresh frozen young turkey, just 49 cents a pound. Limit one, please, with a $5 purchase through Sunday at Dominic's.
Dominic's, Chicagoland's most complete.
I'm wondering if Uncle Henry or Cousin John or your handsome husband came up with a little note that said, we'd like very much for you to have a special present. What would it be? And if you've said to yourself, what I've always really wanted all my life is a new fur coat, then this is the week between Christmas and New Year's when you go out to see Bill Toledas at the Mink Barn. Why? Because Bill is the man who's going to line up that coat for you. Now, Bill whispered to me the other night, he said, you know, Mal, we always have a January 1st sale. That's just traditional with us. So we're going to start it right after Christmas and say to people, we will give you the benefit of this sale. And we're talking 20, 25, 30, 40% on beautiful, beautiful fur garments. So gals, what can I say to you? I can say this. If you're looking for a new fur coat, I don't care what kind it is, you won't find a better coat at a better price than right here at the Mink Barn. What you do is go from Crystal Lake west on 176 until you come to the Franklinville Road. That's before you get to Marengo, or if you come from Rockford, you come just the opposite way and come on this direction from Marengo. And then north on the Franklinville Road, about half a mile and you're there. The Mink Barn, where they do it all, and they do it better than anybody. It's interesting, in this last hour, I was going back into the 60s in my mind, and I was thinking about performers I have met, performers I've had the pleasure of working with, and today we invited a very special friend to come out and sit in with us. I go back a number of years with him. In fact, I'm going to start off this hour with one of the songs that he made so famous. He practically single-handedly built the ski industry to what it is today. And you'll recognize who I'm thinking about when you hear his song.
In this white world that reaches the sky, I found a future for me. Just standing there on a high mountainside, I'm ruler of all I can see. The snow is my lover, the sun is her kiss, the wind sings a love song to me. With the wind and the sun and a vast snowy run, then just like an eagle, I'm free. For my skis are the things that give me my wings and make me an eagle and free. If you see a track in the powder white snow, etching a trail neath the sky, then look for a skier whose heart's in the clouds, and the song in his heart tells you why. He soars through the spaces, he flies through the trees, he races the wind rushing by. For here is a man with his spirit fulfilled, an eagle who must ever fly. For his skis are the things that give him his wings and make him an eagle on high. His skis are the things that give him his wings and make him an eagle on high.
That's Bob Gibson. Bob has a whole album, always put out many different albums, beautiful sounds. But that is one that's always been one of my favorites, and I kept it on my shelf year after year, and people continue to ask me to play that song about the white country, that song about skiing, and I always know what they're thinking of. They're thinking of the beautiful job that Bob did on In This White World. And in just a few moments, we're going to talk to Bob and see what's cooking with him. Right now, I'm going to remind you that the Chateau Louise is right in our own backyard. It is a beautiful resort hotel. It's a conference center, and many businesses use it year after year. I was down there the other day, and there were at least 8 or 9 different companies listed as having luncheons or conventions or sales meetings. And I think that this might be a nice thing for you to do. For you, your family, to get to use the Chateau Louise as your own home away from home. It's a gorgeous spot. And you know, here, take New Year's Eve. $179.95 per couple. Now that includes tax and gratuity. It includes your room, and wait till you see the rooms at the Chateau Louise. They are gorgeous. A split of champagne in your room upon arrival, a complete prime rib dinner, an open bar an hour before, 3 hours after midnight, champagne toast at midnight, dancing and favors, and even a brunch buffet the following morning. And if you want to stay on another day, that's gorgeous. Do it for just $29.95. Now, that's a specific package designed for New Year's Eve. So, if you can't make it New Year's Eve, how about giving your wife that special Christmas present for a month from now, or 2 months from now, or for a birthday, or for a wedding, a reception for your whole family when you're looking for a special place. So often people say you have to go to the other side of the moon to find that perfect spot. You don't, really. The Chateau Louise is located right out here in our backyard, East Dundee, just north of the tollway. I think it's a simple, simple solution to many of your entertaining ideas. Phone number 312-GA68000, the Chateau Louise. Bob, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Mel. Good to see you.
Tell me about the song, In This White World.
Well, that's really how I felt about it. You know, I lived in Aspen for a few years, back when. And I'd get on top of that hill. I didn't know how to ski very well. But that never stopped me from feeling that I owned that mountain. I'd watch Stein Erickson, and I'd think, boy, I think I could do that. And I used to have that feeling. I mean, it really transports you. You get up there on the top of the mountain. You're up there, and you can only see the white peaks of the Continental Divide, and you think you're on top of the world. Matter of fact, you are on top of the world.
You broke your leg out there one year, didn't you?
One time, yeah.
Smart aleck trying to be Stein Erickson.
Right. Well, huh? They tell you, you know, the first day that you're re-skiing again, the first time that, you know, your first day of the season, don't try and ski as well as you did the last day of the last ski season. So I did. did that. And I skied too long, and I got tired, and I broke my leg. So if anybody's listening out there on your first day of this season, don't get too tired, and don't try and ski as well as you did the last day of last year.
The last run is the one that gets you sometimes.
That's the one.
Isn't it? Yeah,
that's the one.
Yeah. And the legs do get a little soft from year to year.
Mine used to shake from about noon on, but...
You are living in Chicago now, aren't you?
I am. I'm a Chicagoan.
And you told me the last time you came out to visit us at Wives, we were in the other building at that time, as I recall, that there was just no reason for you to ever want to live any other place.
I keep trying. You know, the last time I came back about 4 years ago from Los Angeles, a couple of years out there, I was doing that television show and some other Los Angeles-type things. But after 2 years in Los Angeles, you either have to become an official Californian, and I don't know what that means, but I felt the pressure was on, or else go to your... And my home is always Chicago. I keep coming back. I know the town. I mean, you know, you get to just know where it is and the flavors of the neighborhoods and where to have breakfast at 1 o'clock in the morning and where you know, all those kind of things that are important.
Are you still with the folk group of the area, the old folk school of music and so forth? Or
I teach there once or twice a year. I'll do a course on songwriting. I've gotten into creative writing, teaching of it, for the last 6 or 7 years. And I'm crazy about it. I'm going to do something at Harper College in March, a weekend seminar, a real intensive thing. I love to do it. It's for short story, poetry, but mostly songwriting. So songwriting is a little more exacting, a little more craft is necessary. But it's still the same thing. It's getting in touch with a creative place and letting that go. And it's really, I just love to do it. And I've developed a whole kind of way of doing it, a new way of doing it maybe, or I don't know if it's new. I just know that I didn't learn it from anybody. I developed it over 7 or 8 years of teaching groups in colleges and at the Old Town School. And it's, boy, when you get somebody who's always considered themselves not creative but would like to, and they find out that they have a lot to say and that it's in the loving to say it and in the doing of it, it's really inspiring.
You have, the last time I recall, you had an album out with some Shel Silverstein, some very nice, sensitive things that he had written. That must have been your period of concentrating on Shel.
Well, yeah. I don't think I've ever done an album that didn't have a bunch of songs that Shel and I have written. See, we've been collaborating since 1960.
Are you still?
When we get together, he was in Chicago a few weeks ago on his way to New York, and if we, you know, we get together for a few days and write a few songs. That's the nature of our work. But we haven't done it in about 3 years.
Performers grow. They change. You, you do some things. I know you have fans who would just love to hear you do ski songs. Other fans who love to hear you do the banjo stuff, the real honest-to-goodness folk music that you did when you first came into the business.
Mm-hmm.
But I am sort of under the feeling that performers get tired of doing the same things year in, year out. Is that true?
You really do. You know, I can't speak for anyone but myself. The whole thing from the beginning was sort of an indulgence of myself. You know, I liked to do it, and I loved the response and so forth. But still, there's a whole lot of a business of getting in touch with what I like and who I am. And there's a tremendous self-discovery process. And if you stifle it, then you have a job you do. It's like, it is kind of like going down to the plant at 8 o'clock in the morning. I mean, you go in and you do so many minutes on the stage, and you do the things that, you know, kind of work. And I'm not knocking that, because I still like to dip back. I'm so glad I have the old songs. I can dip back.
You still remember them.
Yeah, and some of them I just love to do. I heard one the other evening, one I'd recorded 10 years ago. It's time to start singing it again. I love it. And
what was it?
It's called About Time, something Hamilton Camp wrote.
I remember that.
About Time, okay. Beautiful right. song. And it's time for me to sing that again. I mean, I just suddenly was caught by it. Wow, well, that's a great song. While I'm listening to my own performance of it, I'm thinking, that's a great song. I gotta sing that thing. I gotta do that song. So, I don't know, for me, it's kind of grow, you know, or get stifled. And I've gone through periods where I've just haven't grown, and I got very restive about the business and not real happy to do it, and I don't think I had very much to offer. I certainly didn't have the excitement of real involvement with what I was doing.
You brought out, and I'm so happy to see it, a guitar and your banjo. Nobody plays banjo as well. You are a real goer.
Thank you.
Could we maybe explore around and see a little bit about where Bob Gibson is right now, 1981, going into 1982? I haven't heard you play for at least 4 years live, and I'm just kind of curious. Do you want to take off your coat?
Let me do one.
Okay.
I'm so glad you started talking about banjo. I'm sort of trying to get back to the banjo. The best way to do it is to write new songs for it.
Okay.
That cold Chicago wind was howling down the street. The rain had turned to sleet. If I decide to go, will commence to snow. It's overdue. 'Twas on a night like this, you blew in through my door. I asked for kindness, and you gave me that and more. You taught me how to do the things that lovers do, like coming through and loving you. I've got my banjo tune, but now I've lost the band. I must have missed a turn. I'll never learn, it seems. My music is my dreams. It's what I do. They've closed the hall and put away the microphone. I'm all alone and idly scratching at the string. But then my banjo sings, as banjos often do, of coming through and loving you.
That is so pretty. That's a Bob Gibson?
Yeah, Tom Paxton and I wrote that just recently, and I've been collaborating.
There's often a bit of Bob Gibson. There's a lot of Bob Gibson, I think. There's a heartbeat. See, you sing the way I would sing if I could carry a tune. I know I'd sing just the way you do.
Thank you. That's gorgeous.
All right.
I praise.
Let's just for the fun of it. You know, I'm working with Derry Gilbert here, my engineer. This last hour, I was playing an old tape mine in which I picked top songs from 1962-63. Derek was born just about a year. Now, it's possible Derek doesn't know, or maybe he does. But for some of the kids in the audience who were not aware of that marvelous period in the 60s, and I'd like to go back. Where did you first pick up that guitar and that banjo and start making a buck singing music?
Well, for me, the banjo, you know, was I met Pete Seeger at his house. I went with a friend who was going to do an article on Pete and met him at his home, his cabin he had on a mountain, Hudson River up near Beacon. And he was a fascinating guy all day. As my friend John Revis was talking to him, Dick Miller was talking, one guy was in pictures, the other guy was interviewing. But he Tom Sawyered us. When we got there, he said, look, I can't talk to you. I got to build this chimney. Pete had built this cabin out of logs off the land, and he was building a fieldstone addition to it, a little studio addition with rocks off the land. That's where Pete was. Well, that's where Pete's always been. And he Tom Sawyered us. See, he said, I can't, but you hand me that. And, okay. Well, you got the picture. We were making mortar all afternoon and handing rocks and working with them and helping build his chimney. In the evening, Toshi, his wife, made some food. We sat on this little flat place out in the front of the cabin overlooking the Hudson River. Pete took down his band. From that moment on, I was captivated. It was the most interesting, exciting. I was captivated. That's the only, because I became obsessive about it. I mean, I had to get a banjo. The following Monday, I was back in New York, went and got a banjo, and there wasn't anything that could stop me from hearing everything that recorded. It was very little at that time, folk music. Trying to meet any old timer I could that knew the old songs, getting some of the books that were available, and going back and plaguing Pete all the time to how do you do that? How do you play that? And he'd take me on trips to meet old timers, people like Yankee John Galusha, an old lumberman that lived up in the Adirondacks, and Pete was learning songs from him. So I was exposed wonderfully and was really captivated. I was in business at the time in New York. We had a speed reading program, developmental reading we called it, and we sold it to business executives. I took a year off and I've never been back. And I went out and started to travel around the country to learn the songs, to meet what people were still out there. Because at that time you could meet people who knew a whole bunch of songs they had learned orally from their grandmother while doing the dishes, from their mother or father while driving and trips on the car, and had never learned them from records or sheet music or television or anything, and they all had slightly different versions of the songs. And some of the songs changed quite a bit and quite wonderfully. So I was real interested in all that. And one day in Cleveland, Ohio, a woman's club said, hey, we'll pay you $50 if you'll sing for us in the intermission of the show we're doing. And I thought, this is it. Now it's heaven. I can sing these songs I'm interested in because I wanted to find them, learn them, share them, sing them. And I was getting a little bit captivated with performing, although at that time these were like, it was like antique hunting. You know, you get a great antique, you want to put it right in the foyer where everybody can enjoy it and see it and love it and treasure it. And they paid me money and I said, well, listen, I wasn't really going to be a performer, an entertainer, certainly not a star. I was just going to do it and began to look for places I could do it. At the time it was, when I look back on it now, you know, innocence is a great asset. I didn't know you couldn't do it.
But that $50 was nice, wasn't it?
That $50 was great. I went down immediately to Miami that following fall. I thought that was the place. They need a lot of seasonal musical entertainment, not realizing every musician in the country wants to work down there in the winter at that time and would work for under scale and stuff. And a young kid singing folk songs with a banjo was unheard of. I mean, it just wasn't happening. There were nothing like that in the clubs. There were a couple of people playing the clubs at the time, like Josh White, very sophisticated blues.
I wondered if you'd mentioned Josh.
Sure. Another guy was Richard Dyer Bennett.
Yes.
At the time in the clubs. The Weavers had disbanded at this time. They didn't exist. They played a few clubs, the Blue Angel.
Pete played with them a bit, didn't he?
He was one of the founders.
Pete Seeger and the Weavers, the gal with the...
Ronnie Gilbert. Lee Hayes,
mm-hmm.
Freddie Hellerman.
Were they communists? You know, you keep hearing Pete Seeger's a communist, the Weavers are communists, and I've often wondered, were they?
Well, I don't want to hedge on that. I think that they tried to be.
Philosophically.
At one
communist.
Time they thought that was the way to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that at one time, you know, I feel that Pete kind of said, well, I have the right to think anything I want in this country. I have the right to believe anything I want. And he was believing what would be positive, what would be better. And he was ready to go to jail for his beliefs. He said he had the right to his beliefs. And I think Pete would probably say today that he still has the right to any belief, even if he's wrong. Even if he's wrong.
You know, one night I was at the Blue Note, and it was the opening night for the Weavers. And my wife and I were guests. I was in mm-hmm. Chicago and so forth. So we were down fairly close, and they were introducing people, and a spotlight came around. I saw the people that I knew in the Chicago area were communists, and they were all there. And I was a little embarrassed because I'm not a communist, and yet somehow the folk music and the people who were talking freedom and all got tangled up with the kind of witch hunt for communists that was popular in the country at the time. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I get very captured with some of the ideology of, and I belonged to a group at one time called the American Youth for Democracy for a short period.
A dangerous
of time.
Term at best, huh?
I found out that it had been disbanded not too many months before as the Young Communist League, and came up as the American Youth for Democracy. Well, we were interested in things like veterans housing and veterans bonuses. This was right after the Second World War. And I was in my teens when there's a lot of passion. I mean, you really want to right the wrongs and you got the way. You know, there are no grays. There were no grays for me. It was all black and white. I mean, I saw it all very clearly. But then there were things the AYD would try and present Winston Churchill with a doctorate of warmonger, which was just, that was not,
that hurts
had nothing
a little,
to
yeah.
do with veterans bonuses
yeah.
or veterans housing, you know.
Yeah.
So that, and I got to tell you, that now looking back, I can only tell you that I not only don't think it was part of an international conspiracy, but I think the people running the show were such wimps that we were never great danger.
I got tangled up with a group in Chicago much like it called the American Veterans Committee.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't it always sounds great?
And I was new and back in Chicago, and I wanted to meet some people who'd been in the, and I got there and I found out the first thing they did was take off on the military and take off on all officers. I'd been an officer in the Army, and I'm standing there thinking, what am I listening to you people abusing us for? And so I pulled out of that very quickly, but there were those groups.
Yeah.
I don't know how I got off on that, but
it's interesting.
Ask you about Pete Seeger, yeah, because he has been blackballed. And I've often said to people when they say to me, why do you play his music? I say, because his music is great. I don't really much give a hoot about his political philosophy. There is just nobody like Pete Seeger. He has brought so
yeah.
much to American folk music of the people. I'm just sorry that it gets tangled up with something basically as unpleasant as the USSR.
Yeah. I think he's far from that, you know, and right or wrong, I gotta say the man has immense integrity. He has been willing to suffer, willing to pay the price of his beliefs. He lives the life he talks about. For that, I will forever admire him.
His respect of our nature, our environment, ecology.
And his fellow man and all. Yeah. He doesn't just talk this stuff. That's how he lives. And I think, you know, I really think that a man like Pete, we need him. As wrong as Pete might be, somebody has to be out on the leading edge, taking the brunt, taking the abuse. Somebody has to be wrong so that somebody can be right. There's no way that we can say all got to be right. There's only one right way. The second we're doing that, we're really in trouble, because then the next thing we're going to do is say, to make sure we're all right, we will now pass a law that we will all think this, you know. Yeah. So it takes guys like Pete who are out there, and perhaps the change is never as radical as they want it to be. Change never maybe should be, but we have to have somebody testing the direction, and as I say, willing to pay the personal cost involved, which he did for a lifetime. And then we can say, that's a good way to go. That's not such a good way to go. I'll go part way that way. You know, we got to have those people.
He was talking about cleaning up rivers and streams long before most of us were thinking about cleaning up rivers and streams. Yeah.
Good man, though, an activist. He really did it.
Do you still remember a nice old folk song for us, Bob? If we were to say, hey, let's go back to that period of time when you were getting $50. Let's do a song here out of maybe that period of folk gut basic American music. And if you don't remember all the words, just go humpity dump thump thump or
do
something.
Do what we can with it. Okay. It's, let me just... And the boatmen love Miss Mary Ann. Dance, boatmen, dance. Dance, the boatmen, dance. Dance all night in the broad daylight and go home with the gals in the morning. Hey ho, boatmen row, sailing down the river on the Ohio. Hey ho, boatmen row, sailing down the river on the Ohio. The boatmen sing and the boatmen play and the boatmen sing most every day. Dance, boatmen, dance. Dance, boatmen, dance. Dance all night in the broad daylight and go home with the gals in the morning. Hey ho, boatmen row, sailing down the river on the Ohio. Hey ho, boatmen row, sailing down the river on the Ohio.
Happy music. Bob Gibson and his Makes You Want to Dance music. I love it. Okay, for those of you who just dropped in, this is the real Bob Gibson, Bob Gibson Live, sitting across the table from me doing what I love to do, listen to Bob, and doing what Bob likes to do, make people listen. So we'll be back in just a second.
We're at Toyota Dealer's Year-End Bonus Days, and Father Time 1981 has just arrived on a pogo stick. That's no way for you to get around.
You're killing me. And on New Year's, they take away the stick, the beard, and the title. Father Time 81 becomes Mr. Nobody 82.
Cheer up, old-timer.
Give me one good reason.
It's Year-End Bonus Days at your Toyota dealer.
Can I afford a Toyota? Father Times are underpaid, you know.
Don't worry. Talk price with your dealer. Talk trade-in. And you'll get special bonuses of economy and quality on every Toyota for the rest of the week.
Feels so much better.
And what a selection. Front-wheel drive Corolla Tercels, Total Economy Starlets, Sporty Corolla Hardtops, Coronas, Cressidas, even sleek new Celica Supras.
Yeah.
And incentives from Toyota on tough Toyota trucks may mean extra big savings for you.
I declare.
So come down to your participating Toyota dealer's year-end bonus days and drive home a new 82 Toyota. Hurry, cause time's running out.
'Twas the day after Christmas, and all through the house it looked like disaster. I felt like a louse, with the parties all over and the post-Christmas blahs. I was bored, I was blue, I was no Santa Claus. Oh, what could I do that would bring me some cheer and carry me over until the new year? when what to my long anxious eyes should appear but an ad in the paper that comes once a year. Plywood, Minnesota is having a sale. Oh, goody, for a few days only. Now that's quite a tale. The prices are low as they'll ever be on kitchens and bathrooms and carpet. Whoopee! Wallpaper, paneling, ceilings, and floors. They're having a clearance throughout the whole store. So now I feel better. I know you will too, because Plywood, Minnesota cures the post-Christmas blues.
Stop by Plywood, Minnesota at Routes 14 and 47 in Woodstock.
Bob, tell me about the period now after the 50 bucks in the ladies' women's club over in Cleveland. What happened then?
Well, Ben, I began, you know, some wonderful things began to happen, some opportunities. Such things, I began to work clubs in New York like the Village Vanguard and the Blue Angel, which were at that time, they were sort of the apex of the avant-garde clubs. And from them, you get jobs elsewhere a little bit. The Arthur Godfrey Talent Show, I was a winner on that, and I became sort of a regular on his show. I worked many, many weeks. You'd work a week at a time or 2 weeks at a time, his show. And then I think one of the most important things was the advent of a series of clubs around the country. And the leader of the bunch was in Chicago, called the Gator Horn, a club that was basically designed to present intimate listening entertainment.
The old gate and then the new gate, huh? Mm-hmm.
One of the great innovations was a club started in Chicago called the Offbeat, when Ken Nordine started.
Yes.
And Ken did it sort of as a vanity place where he could do his readings and do his poetry and kind of do it his way. And one of the things that he insisted upon was that people had to listen. If they didn't care to, they had to leave. Well, now that doesn't seem so odd today. But I'll tell you, 25 years ago, that was strong talk. Because basically the customer was always right, and if you had a party of six come in and sit in front table at the edge of the stage and hoot and holler and carry on and make it almost impossible to work the rest of the that was okay. They were the paying customer. Well, the truth was a party of six can, you know, destroy the feeling for a whole room full of people.
Absolutely.
And so Ken said, look, you know, if they make noise, obviously they're asking for their check. That's probably what they're yelling. Mm-hmm. Let's just assume that if they yell and make a lot of noise or kibitz with the entertainer on stage and try and be hecklers, probably what they really are asking for is their check. Well, some guys, Al Grossman and Les Brown, saw that and said, by golly, a room can run this way and run successfully. The people who then adopted the Offbeat Room and later the Gator Horn adopted it as their own. People who didn't normally go to nightclubs, because nightclubs had a definite feeling about those days. I mean, they were real kind of that way. A lot of hecklers, a lot of rowdy, a lot of stuff. And suddenly they became listening rooms where you could really go and try and make a connection with the former. Well, this was ideal for folk music, and a bunch of us were interested in that time, in our roots, I guess. I never conceived that I was interested in my roots or anything high-flown like that, but these songs were out there and they were available, and I liked them a lot.
Fun to sing.
Absolutely.
You can feel an audience come back to you with them.
And there's a real sense of I don't know, rightness. They are our roots. They really are. You know, the Anglo and the Black tradition in rural America, that's the roots of all the stuff that's going on now, even though it's you know, escalated to electronic levels and stuff. But for a long period, they were clearly the roots. You know, there's a parallel between then and now. We were going through a recession in the ladies.
Yes,
a very decided one. And I'm not sure. There's a lot of talk now that there's a resurgence of interest in our roots, and it's coming around again. Well, I don't really know about that. I'm not that in touch with the industry, music industry as a whole. But it seems that at that time, people were interested in what was more real, what was more solid, what was more tangible. And part of it seemed to come out in roots, musical roots. What were they?
Bob, now it's a whole new ball game.
Sure is.
The big bucks are in the rock groups and the big concerts that are, what I mean, $50 million on the
Stones tour.
The Stones show and all. You guys who were doing the concerts, because that's what you were doing them in small rooms for people who really cared and people who would feel that impulse. Now, as you say, it's electronics and it's great massive speakers. And where is the young performer today, or is there a young performer today who wants to sing the music of roots?
There are some, you know, it's a small group. It's kind of like, you know, bebop. I mean, there's some around, you know, there's some that hasn't moved over into fusion or jazz rock or something. There's some people that want to play jazz the way it was played. And there are some young kids who choose to play traditional music. Tremendous interest now in the Celtic bands, you know, Celtic music and some of the music of Normandy, Breton music, a lot of Irish music, fiddle music, pipe music and stuff. And young kids taking it up. I mean, we just ran a course at the Old Town School of Folk Music and Irish Step Dancing by one of the young brilliant ones. And I'm telling you, we had 30 people out there every Monday night, and it's just magnificent to watch.
Now that's roots music.
Roots
because
music.
Because a lot of our folk music started there.
Yep.
And came across, didn't it?
Yeah. So there's, you know, there's something going on, but because of a whole lot of factors, you know, the that kind of intimate music can't work now for, as you say, the large halls and so forth. It doesn't really work on television. It doesn't translate well to the tube, too static. A person sitting on a stool or standing by a microphone frozen to it doesn't give the camera anywhere to go. You know, the whole thing is
hence all the choreographic, all the hip movement. Is that what that is? Do we blame TV for that?
I don't know. Toffler in Third Wave makes an interesting point. He says that the size of music and music production grew as the size of audiences was able to grow. In other words, the promoters, the entrepreneurs, starting with string quartets and moving up to symphony orchestras, even though in those days we have to look that they were patrons. The wealthy would underwrite and patronize whole orchestras and the great writers. You know, I mean, all our great masters had patrons, and that was even easier than getting money from the National Endowment for the Arts Foundation. But as the halls grew, and now we have these huge halls, and we have, as you say, the electronic wonders. You know. Where we can translate accurately what we're able to do in a recording studio, we can now do before 20,000 people. To the point where, I mean, at 20,000 people, the thing has to be through the ears. It has to be audio, because from the back row, Joan Baez looks like Kris Kristofferson. I mean, there is no difference. So you get into the smoke bombs and the fog machines and the three-story gallows that, you know, Alice Cooper had, you begin to get some sort of effect, staging effects that are in proportion to the size of the arena, not really in proportion to the size of the performers. I mean, I've never watched the Stones perform, but I've seen a few, you know, film clips and stuff. And I must say, you gotta say that they use the space well. You know, in theater terms, they use the space. They go all over this huge stage.
And
you know,
Phil Soldier Field or some of these huge places, it must be a rather large job. I think I would feel very insignificant standing up there against 20,000 people.
And at the same time, I'm not sure at that size, you know, that the music is necessarily the number one attraction. You hear the music from the performer and watch the performer do it, but the event itself comes, the event becomes the because there's nothing new. You're not going to hear any music there that isn't being brought, you haven't heard on record. When you're working for 20,000 people, the idea is, I don't think, to go out there and jam. I mean, they don't do that much. That really doesn't happen. The great jams that are supposed to be jams are far from it. They are choices of a whole series of ways they can go. But the stuff's pretty well, you know, for 20,000 people, you better have your act together.
I'd rather have one or two and close in and a couple of hearts beating close together. Give us another Bob Gibson, would you?
Sure. I'd like to do another new song.
All right.
Songwriter's favorite song is always the last song he wrote.
Certainly. And this one was written when?
A couple months ago.
Okay. Called
Looking for the You with Someone New. Sometimes there's a sweeter curve, a different way to touch the nerve. Exciting just because it's strange and new. Then the novelty wears thin. I have to face the fact again. I'm looking for the you in someone new. So I invent new fantasies, brand new thrills I think I need. Then I seek them out, but when I'm through, it hurts me then to realize it's just a futile exercise of looking for the you in someone new. And all the time I look for you, I'm blind to everything I see. I could miss Miss Wonderful if she were standing right in front of me. So I flirt and carry on. I'm not so satisfied, Don Juan. I'm sorry, I don't know what else to do. To some it might look pretty sad to search so hard for what I had, looking for the you in someone new. And all the time I look for you, I'm blind to everything I see. I could miss Wonderful if she were standing right in front of me. Maybe someday I'll discover the one who is the perfect lover, and I can close the books on me and you and concentrate on my new friend and never have to go again looking for the you in someone new.
So sad, Bob.
Sort of, but not really, you know? I mean, how...
He loved her and he lost her,
but what a beautiful thing to be able to do to say it, you know?
That's a nice title.
Looking for you and someone new. Haven't we all done it?
Is that a you or a Paxton?
Me?
That's a you. Yeah. That's a you, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Looking for the you there.
Looking for the you and someone new.
That's a pretty, pretty song.
Yeah.
I hope he... Well, I'm lost here. Do we go back to the one he lost, or does he finally find... What he liked about number one and number two?
I don't know.
Is there some of you in that song?
Absolutely. I mean, there's some, you know, there has to be some of me in everything I write. You know?
Sure.
But paying honor to somebody wonderful in your life, you know. And it happens, you know, a relationship that's very meaningful to break up. And everyone that you meet doesn't stand a chance because they have to be compared, you know. And sometimes even when there's a lot left over, there still won't work out for one reason or another. A geographical thing comes up, work takes you somewhere. So it's not always, you know, it isn't always a clean break.
And this is where the Bob Gibson, who is the poet and the musician, can put it all together in his own particular little art form, which is...
Now, last night, after doing a show at the Earl, I got a smart guy and I said, I really wrote that for Agnes Comco in the 7th grade in Yorktown Junior High School.
Okay.
And we had a thing going that was very real until Miss Morgan in English class intercepted one of our notes and read it to the class.
These songs of yours have some roots then, huh, Mr. Gibson? We'll continue here in just a second.
We're at Toyota Dealer's year-end bonus days, and Father Time 1981 has just arrived on a pogo stick. That's no way for you to get around.
You're telling me, and on New Year's, they take away the stick, the beard, and the title. Father Time 81 becomes Mr. Nobody 82.
Cheer up, old-timer.
Give me one good reason.
Still got a slight of Benoit spot in here someplace, somehow.
Your Toyota dealer.
Can I afford a Toyota? Father Times are under...
Okay.
Don't worry. Talk price with your dealer. Talk trade-in. And you'll get special bonuses of economy and quality on every Toyota for the rest of the week.
Feels so much better.
And what a selection. Front-wheel drive Corolla Tercels, Total Economy Starlets, Sporty Corolla Hardtops, Coronas, Cressidas, even sleek new Celica Supras.
Yeah.
And incentives from Toyota on tough Toyota trucks may mean extra big savings for you.
I declare.
So come down to your participating Toyota dealer's year-end bonus days and drive home a new 82 Toyota. Hurry, cause time's running out.
I ask you the following question. Where is a good, reliable place in this area where you can get professional, quality dry cleaning? The answer is obvious. It's at Comet Cleaners on McHenry Avenue near Route 14 in Crystal Lake. Comet Cleaners meets your needs with such services as a drive-up window, same-day service, men's or women's two-piece suits cleaned and pressed only $3.80, slacks only $1.80. Comet Cleaners on McHenry Avenue and Route 14 in Crystal Lake. Open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. till 6 p.m., and also they clean on Saturdays, 7 a.m. until 5 p.m. So if you have some cleaning that needs to be done, we've got the place for you to take it. Comet Cleaners.
Here they come, America's driving machines. Here they come from Dodge, the driving machines. Here's your new 82 with front-wheel drive. Your high-mileage Dodge has just arrived. So take the wheel and see what we mean. Get a great deal on a driving machine. Dodge drives America. America's driving machines. Dodge drives America. America's driving machines.
For a brand new car at a reasonable price, visit Benoy Motors on Lake Avenue in Woodstock. See Dale or Ray and let them put a great deal together for you.
Bob, what is the significance of that gold guitar pin that you wear on your coat?
A dear lady gave it to me, and, you know, everyone has service pins of some kind, an organization or their military service, some indication. Well, I've never done any of that stuff, but I do play the guitar, so I wanted to wear it. I've served.
Lovely pin. Yeah, you paid your dues.
This is my service.
Is there a dear lady in your life now?
Yes, there is.
I'm delighted to hear that.
I am delighted to report.
All right, let's see what else. Last time you visited me, you said that you and booze had come apart, that you had no more need for any of that stuff. Is that true? Still?
Yeah, I wouldn't quite say that as, you know, not to so much no more need, but we definitely parted company. I had kind of got my share and then some, and was fortunate 4 years ago to be get help that I needed. I had to do it for myself and do it by myself.
Tough being in a club every night, isn't it? Hey, Bob, come and have a drink with us. Hey, Bob.
That and of course, drugs were really my predilection, although they're really kind of one and the same. They're really the same thing. We tend, you know, a lot of folks think there's a great difference between primarily the function is the same, a way of not coping, dealing with things. And see, it's really easy to get drugs or staying on and learning how to live the way that you need to do that. That's a little more, and it's an ongoing process. It's not a lesson you can learn. You don't graduate from that. It's something you must do. It brings a lot of joy, a lot of peace, a lot of serenity and satisfaction, because in order to do that, you use some tools to try and live life a day at a time, a little differently, which leads me to a song.
All right, yeah, lead me to a song. Okay, Bob. All right.
Deep in the darkness, I've known you. I stumble aimless and alone. At last, too weary of the pain, I choose to find my way again. I journey step by step along this healing path that makes me whole. I am a pilgrim of my mind. I am a seeker of my soul. Yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery. I know the past is dead, the future's blind. By living in this moment, with the light I need to find my way, I will make it one day at a time. And though this journey is my own, I need not travel it alone. By sharing faith with broken friends, broken pilgrims slowly mend. We journey step by step along this healing path that makes us whole. We are the pilgrims of our mind. We are the seekers of our
visit with Bob Gibson. And I think sometimes the visits with old friends, the sitting and talking over the fun we've had in performing careers as we continue on down the road, and I think coming just between Christmas and New Year's, fantastic. Can you go out to lunch?
Can.
Bob, it's great. You're currently Old Town?
No, I'll be at the Earl of Old Town toward the end of the month.
Oh, let me know where you are. Okay. Let's not drift apart. I want to keep you on my list of
this was a wonderful
AU
visit. Time went real fast.
Too
and
fast.
I really enjoyed
fast
it. Thank you.
Happy New Year, Bob. WIVS Crystal Lake, Illinois. I remind all of you that TC Spirits is having the big party. The big party right here in Crystal Lake on Route 14. You can come in on New Year's Eve, be part of their regular party at 3250, or just come and eat in the dining room and drift on into the bar and have a good time there. It'll be fun to be here in Crystal Lake on New Year's Eve. Time for the news now at noon, brought to you by Ormsby Motors, our Pontiac dealer there in downtown Crystal Lake. Happy New Year to you from them.
Action is underway in Atlanta as the murder trial of Wayne Williams began today. Williams is charged with two of the Atlanta area's 28 child murders in which young blacks were found dead over the past 2 years. The jury selection began more than an hour late today because of tight security measures. Bucky Port.